We head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know him, you love him. 92.3 The Fan, The Athletic, so many more. The man, I've said this about everybody that has multiple jobs in this town. People call him the Seacrest of Cleveland. He is Jason Lloyd, and he joins us now. Jason, welcome to the show.
I wish I had Seacrest checkbook, I can tell you that.
I would, yeah, but you'd have to be Seacrest. That's the problem. You think that guy likes himself? I'm going to say no.
All the Wheel of Fortune people have turned on him.
Yeah, why?
Oh, look really? At him.
Yeah, he was like beloved by everyone, it felt like, except I don't know about Nick. But then all of a sudden, he got on the Wheel of Fortune, and now everyone seems to like dislike his... He's no Pat Sajak.
He's no Sajak, he's no Vanna.
I haven't watched that show in 20 years, so... Man, I can tell you.
We got to get you to drink more because it does. Like if you're having a couple pops by about 7 o'clock at night, it's a great show to drink along to.
I don't even drink anymore. Hardly ever.
Jason, that's how I am too.
Me neither. Big fudge.
I accidentally told Nick, I'm like, I'm like forever sober the other day because it was just joking in the long period of time I haven't drank because I have a 2-year-old and Nick's like, wait. You're abandoning the crew? You're leaving us? You're done? I'm like, no, I'm not done. I promise.
I'll come back one day.
I just like being old and home and not. Yeah, I don't do any of that. I'm not any fun anymore.
Yeah, that's where I do my drinking. I mean, that's I got a fridge in the garage just for beer, Jason. I've made it. Like there's no better than that. Just being walking out, being like, I've got 60 Coors Banquet and 60 Dos Equis. I don't have that much, but I've got that. I got 120 beers in my fridge whenever I want to go.
We have a drink fridge in the pantry that consists of Sunkist, Dr. Pepper, Coke Zero, and chocolate milk for my son's protein shakes. And
all
that's
right.
About it.
All right. I'm rescinding the Cleveland.
Iced tea and lemonade. Iced tea and lemonade.
This is, I mean, well, just get a little. Just, yeah, no. I'm not going to do it. It's fine. I believe you. So, how are we feeling about game 3 for the Cavs there, Jason?
Better if they're playing. Better if all the hurt guys play. I mean, listen, this isn't the 15-16 Warriors they're playing, okay? Like, are they out of this series? No, I don't believe that they are. Now, if they don't get Darius and Evan back, are they out of the series? Yeah. Yeah, it's probably over. They probably aren't going to win the series without two of their big three or four, whatever catchy phrase you want to use for them. But if they can get these guys back on the floor, they can absolutely still win the series.
Have you found this incredibly hard to talk about because we just don't have any answers as to whether or not these guys are going to actually be on the court? So it's almost like you're discussing two different games, Jason. Like if this guy plays or if all three of them don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's unbelievable that like for the second year in a row, we are back in this position after going through everything last year with Jarrett coming out of the Orlando series and then into the Boston series, and every day it was, is he going to play or is he not? And like somehow we've found ourselves right back in that same spot. I've already said I left the arena after game one believing Darius was going to play. I was fairly surprised he did not play game two. The indications I was getting was that he was probably going to play, that he was going to play game two. And then for him not to play, I have no explanation as to why he didn't. But, you know, it sounds like hopefully, maybe, possibly, I know. I think Joe just wrote a story for us, just tweeted out, trending as if all three could play in game three. If that's the case, if they get these guys back, absolutely this is still a series. I mean, they got the work cut out for them, no question about it. But the Cavs are the best team in the East for a reason. And even Darius, I know Kenny said they don't want Darius out there at 50 or 60%. I'm looking at this going, you know what? 60% Darius isn't so bad when you compare it to 1-14 Ty Jerome. And that's not to bang on Ty. Ty's had a tremendous year. He's had a wonderful year. He's one of the best stories of the NBA. But, you know, when Ty Jerome is taking 20 shots as he did in game one, you're not setting yourself up in position to win. And Ty's got a specific role that he's really, really good at. And when you expand that role and you ask him to carry more of the load than what he's capable of, it's probably not fair to him or to the rest of the team. So even a 60%, 70% Darius, given the alternatives, that's not so bad.
Jason, if all three do play, let's say all three are ready to play the rest of the series, so if we get the health in line there, what's the key to winning this series and winning four out of the next five games?
What's the key? Well, so getting them back on the floor, you have to see how effective they are, right? Like, we're just assuming this is a video game and you put them back on the floor and now they're 100% and everything's as normal. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. We'll have to see if they're limited at all in any way. Evan is still, I mean, we're only a couple days removed from an ankle. I don't want to say a significantly sprained ankle, but from a significant enough that he couldn't really bear much weight on it. So we have to see what kind of shape that he's in. But Evan, to me, like, they don't have an answer. Evan Mobley could be the most important player in the series, the most impactful player still to go, because I don't think Indiana really has an answer for him at either end of the floor. I don't know who they use to guard him with. Again, if he's effective, if he can move on the ankle and he can do all the things that we're accustomed to him seeing, I just think that he really provides a dimension that they're not accustomed to. Yes, Indiana plays fast. Yes, we know that. But it's not as if the Cavs aren't accustomed to playing fast as well. They've had plenty of games this year with pace ratings into the hundreds, and they've done just fine. So, I mean, the key, obviously, this is a team built on three-point shots. But beyond that, they defend really well, and they defended really well for 47 minutes the other night, and they lost the game in the final minute because they couldn't get the ball across half court.
Jason, something
in the final minute of the game.
Yeah, something I thought was really interesting was how, you know, we have all three guys that are out, and I'm sure if they could be out there, they'd be out there. But then you see Donovan, and Donovan is just, he's clearly playing injured, and he's playing his ass off. But it reminds me of LeBron in a way, just an unending desire to win. Do you see that as well?
You are 1,000% correct. Donovan is obsessed with winning in a way that not every player is. And, I mean, I had that conversation with LeBron when he was here multiple times his last year here. Of his point was, like, not everybody's built for it. Not everybody's built for the moment. Not everybody is obsessed with winning. Donovan is. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's made his money. He's on his second max contract. He's got all the All-Star games. He's had MVP votes, All-NBA. He's had all of that. What he doesn't have is anything beyond the second round, and he's well aware of that. And he, to see him, like I said this earlier, if anyone should be sitting, it's probably Donovan with the calf, because when you're playing through calf injuries, I mean, we all know calf injuries can lead to Achilles. So he's literally putting it all on the line because he knows that this team has a legitimate chance to win a championship. And that doesn't come around very often. And I was having a conversation with him late in the year about, I said, you may just have to wait. You may just have to wait out Boston. And this was before Shams reported that, the Celtics may have to break, or they probably will break things up, because it's always been trending that way. If you pay attention to this NBA salary cap and you see where their money is and where it's headed, it's untenable. And so it was always sort of a factor that the Celtics may have to split up some pieces here this summer. And I said, you may just have to wait them out. And he was like, I've heard that before in my career at times in Utah. He's like, I reject that. I'm not buying that. And like this is their time as far as he's concerned, because you're never guaranteed. Yes, the Cavs have this core for two more years before they have their own hard decisions they have to make. They have this postseason and they have the next 2 years to go. And then they're going to have to make some really hard choices. But there's no guarantee that they will have the health that they had during the regular season. I know they're beat up now. There's no guarantee. Who's to say that another super team doesn't form this summer with Kevin Durant moving teams or Devin Booker? You just don't know. So you have to – who saw the Warriors coming in 2016? Nobody. Or 2015, mm-hmm. 2014-15. Nobody. When LeBron came back, everybody thought it was going to be Cavs Spurs for the next 4 years. So you just never know. You have to take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you at that moment. And this is a team built for right now to win a championship. And he sees that and he understands that. And he – is consumed with the idea of winning at a level that probably not many other players are, especially guys who haven't gotten it yet. He's never mentioned as one of the all-time greats. He's not in the Michael conversation. He's not in the LeBron conversation. He's not in that tier player. He's not a top five player in the league. He probably never will be. But that's not to take away from what he is. And what he is an absolute freaking warrior to go out and do what he did the other night and score 48 points on one leg, getting double-teamed, triple-teamed, getting harassed the way he was, playing through injury. He was an absolute monster in that game, and I think he'll continue to play that way. And really, I just hope for his health. I really hope that he's not subjecting himself to further injury by playing on that calf.
Jason, looking to the Browns, we've already had a few bits of shadrama, as we're calling it. Shador-based drama with his photographer and, I guess, social media dude. I don't know all the things that Boog does, but tweet about potential disrespect, that the Browns were disrespecting him with not giving Shador the number two. That was deleted. And several other things. Are the Browns... Yeah, as he supposed, as Boog supposed, are the Browns going out of their way to try and humble Shador?
No. No, he's a rookie. He's a rookie fifth-round pick. Like, I don't get hung up on the social media. I truly don't pay that much attention to social media. I know it's weird for a sports writer to say that, but I really don't.
You don't drink. You don't pay attention to social media. You don't sound like a reporter to me.
I'm a loser. I've tried to tell you that. If you listen to the people who don't like me very
next,
much,
you'll tell us you don't even like Springsteen.
But no, I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with humbling him. It's just the way that they're going to operate. Like, how many guys go down the list? How many guys, rookies, got the number that they wanted? It's not a long list. If you go back and look at the video, I think, didn't Judkins say he wanted one or two or something at that video at the Browns first posted? He didn't get it. Are they trying to humble him? Veterans always have dibs on jerseys. It's the way it is. He hasn't earned anything. He's a rookie. And if he lives up to what he thinks he can become, he'll get whatever number he wants. But he's got to prove it on the field first. That's all.
What's your expectation? Is tomorrow a lot of the media gets to see Shador throw a football in person for the first time?
Oh, I'm sure it'll be picked apart and over-examined and under a microscope and all that. And I mean, what are we really going to learn, guys? It's May. But we'll everybody will run out there and get the footage and have all the talking points and all that. You're not going to really excuse me. You're not going to know anything until July, August, when this really turns into a camp battle. It'll be fun. Give people something to talk about.
Jason, if I asked you for percentages of which for each of the four quarterbacks, of what percent each quarterback has a chance to actually to win the quarterback job, the starting quarterback job for week one, are the percentages equal? How would it skew?
Oh boy, I hadn't really thought.
Yeah, I'm asking you to do math. What a D move by me.
Well, I mean, I'm already on record. I was on with Ken and Anthony a week or two ago. I thought Flacco's the odd man out in this if both rookies perform to the level. I mean, Dillon Gabriel's on this team. He's a third-round pick. If you're presuming that Shador makes the team, and I do believe he'll be on this roster, then that leaves one spot for a veteran, and I just think it's Pickett over Joe, because that's who they pursued first. That was their intention. One of the first moves they made was go out and acquire Kenny Pickett, and they gave up a draft pick to get him. So, I mean, maybe I'm way off on that. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I see this. I think Kenny Pickett has the highest odds of being the week one starter. But I do think that both rookies are going to play often and play early in the season, because you got to find out what you have. Very clearly, they told you without telling you their plan was to go get a quarterback in 2026, to move down in the draft the way that they did, to acquire the extra first-round pick as ammunition. By taking Dillon Gabriel in the third round, certainly nobody saw them taking Shador in the fifth. Their plan all along, it seems, and I, by the way, I applaud it. I've been on board with this all along, was to go find a quarterback in next year's draft. They believe that there's going to be a lot more talent to pick from next year. So that leaves 1 year to see what you've got in these guys. So you have to see what you got. It's the same reason that I was advocating to play Dorian. Why waste the time with Jameis? You know what Jameis is. Play Dorian and see what you have. And either you're going to run into something that you didn't know you had, or it's going to be so bad that you'll be in position to then go get what you need. And it turned out to be B, where they were in position to go get what they needed. The only problem was there were no groceries in the aisle. Like, what they were looking for was not available in the draft. So it's sort of the same thing. You're still in that boat. It's just two different faces now. It's Dillon and Shador. I think will each have opportunities. They'll each have game opportunities, provided both make the roster, and I believe that they will. And then you see, did you run into something with them? Did you find something that you can move with going forward? Okay, great. Now you've got two first-round picks and your quarterback in place. More than likely, they'll probably be back in the quarterback market still in 2026.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see it that way as well. But is Stefanski then on like a free roll? Or if we put him up in this, I don't know that anyone else does at this point, but this like Kyle Shanahan air where you can take anybody and turn him into something, then shouldn't we be judging him based off of, even if it's just two quarterbacks taken in the third and fifth round, whether or not he's able to get the job relatively done with either of those quarterbacks or even Kenny Pickett in the mix?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to base his job security on whether or not he gets a third or fifth round pick to perform to the standards of an NFL quarterback. Like, and by the way, nobody with the Browns operated through that draft as if their jobs are on the line. Can we agree on that? If you were afraid that you were about to get fired and you didn't want to get fired, you wanted to keep this job, would you trade down from 2 to 5 and pick up a pick for the next general manager to make the pick?
No,
nobody's going to do that. So obviously, they are operating as if they've got the security that this is a transition year. Ownership sees it that way, and they are safe. The risk in that, and the only risk in that, is that you have to trust the ownership to see it through. And the only reason I say that is because I've talked to people who were in that building who said they got a glowing job review that they're like, even those guys have annual reviews, even at that level, just like all of us have to go through. They go through annual reviews. Got a glowing review, got a glowing report on the annual review, was fired 2 weeks later. So you just have to take ownership at its word. And if you believe them, then that's why you operate as if you do. If Jimmy says, hand up, like, you know, Deshaun was on me, whatever. There are no quarterbacks. This is not a good – and by the way, it's not just the Browns saying that. The entire NFL just told you that, that this was not – in their eyes, we'll see if they were right or not, this was not a good draft for quarterbacks. So we'll bide our time. We'll chip and putt. We're going to play these young guys. We're going to see if we ran into anything or not. And if not, and the overwhelming evidence, how many times do you actually find, yes, the Brock Purdy's exist? Yes, they do. The Tom Brady's exist. But the overwhelming evidence is you don't very often find a starting quarterback in the third round and the fifth round. It can happen, but it's not likely. So if this indeed is the case again where we don't have the guy, they don't have the guy, they will go back into the market in 2026. And these guys will still be here to make the pick and coach him.
Jason, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate you, even the lies about you don't drink anymore. We appreciate it all.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, see you guys.
Jason Lloyd there of The Athletic on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll react to his Cavs and Browns thoughts in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.